Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Morning, everybody, and thank you, Aaron. I'm delighted to be here, and thanks for inviting me along. My topic is about talking about public information as a driver to inform student choice. Now, I just want to start off by saying that we all bring a number of things to debates of this type. We bring the knowledge we have that we've gained in our subject areas. We bring our knowledge of the sector and what's happened in the sector. And we bring our own personal values and our personal influences. And I've always been driven by a particular experience I had as a student. And yeah, I can remember that far back. And I'll never forget it. And it's something that has shaped a lot of what I've worked on and tried to do over many years. I was the first in my family to go into higher education. And I went a number of years ago. And my first experience and my induction into higher education and learning at that level was that I had a timetable. So course organisation was all right. I had a timetable. I went into the lecture theatre. I'd never been in a lecture theatre in my life. I sat down next to somebody who I didn't know. Somebody walked into the front of the room and said good morning. And that was the nicest thing he said all year. And he started talking. And the person next to me, who became a great friend, started to write things down. So I thought, well, I'd better. And that was my first day in higher education. No preparation, no family background to tell me and to advise me as to the sort of things that I should be involved in and what I should be looking for. Brand new experience for me. And one of the things that shaped for me was a determination that it should never happen anywhere I work. And that we need to ensure that students are fully informed, fully advised, and know what to expect. And a lot of that is about transition to higher education, about building those bridges, and about developing those journeys. And I spent a lot of time still trying to find out about what students think and how students engage. In our university, we've adopted the students as partners quite clearly. Whether we've actually got it embedded fully across the institution is an interesting question. We make sure that our students' union are members of the senior management team, members of every single committee in the university, and are engaged in every single decision. And that's a voice. I spend quite a bit of time looking at the analysis of the free text in the NSS. And identifying different groups of students that I want to go and talk to. Every Tuesday, I teach a first-year class to understand that first-year experience and to hear those things that people say. And those are the sort of building blocks that I use, as well as talking to our alumni and our former students to gain issues about their perceptions. Now, what's this in the sense of information? Is that in the White Paper of 2011, which was essentially about student funding and systems of funding a system, not about an educational vision, the Higher Education White Paper talked and made a very clear commitment, as had been said by David Willetton a number of occasions running up to the election, about the need for better information for students. And that's the quote that came from that particular white paper about information available to prospective students, making it better, improving it, and enhancing it. And then if we look at where students get their information from, a variety of sources. You would add on their social media. You would add on lots of different ways in which students get their information. Not all of it, in fact, much of it, is not particularly controllable. But when we talk about that type of information, and when we look at some of the things that has come out as a result of that white paper, there is a very clear focus in all the policy shaping across UK higher education. And that is a concentration on sequential study for school leavers going into full-time undergraduate higher education. That's the pattern that is inevitably looked at in all the policy shapes that take place. So we have different bits of information, and institutions and different groups engage in that information. The private sector produces various booklets and guides as a means of engaging in that debate as well. We have to also be very clear about the distinction between information and promotional activity. At what point do we cross over in terms of impartiality and in terms of seeking what is best and most appropriate for prospective students? Universities work really hard and have worked really hard for many, many years at looking at links with primary schools and secondary schools and colleges in their area about the transition, about what's available and how it can work and what people need to do and what people need to know. And that work has inevitably had some tensions between promotional activity and information of an impartial nature. Edward's already picked up on the QAA. The QAA has a very clear quality code, and it's revising that quality code. And at the moment, and there is provision about the provision of information, the sorts of things that every institution should consider. And on the higher education review, when the institutional team, when the QA team visits, it looks at that type of information. It looks about how institutions have presented that type of information. And it makes judgments, and it will include that in the report and invariably in terms of conditions and recommendations. We've had the development of the key information set. There are debates, and there have been many debates, about what you could include in the key information set. And as the sector developed that, inevitably, it develops it to broadly represent and reflect all the different types of institutions that provide higher education, many of whom are not universities, a number of which are not in the public sector. And we have to reflect that what we want to do is to provide consistent information in one place that's comprehensive and impartial. So the key information sets, this is the second year. There's always, in any major initiative like this, some technical issues. And I'll never forget the Higher Education Funding Council writing to all vice-chancellors about how to operate the widget on the key information set, a nice little circular document, and Edward will possibly remember we don't get many circulars about widgets in that sense. But it has had some technical issues, but it is there, and it's there for information for people to use. And it's there so that you can have comprehensive, impartial, complete data. And it's all got to be verified. And the Higher Education Funding Council for England does audit that information. And in the production of that information, it questions and challenges certain institutions about certain things that are said. So there is some teeth there. There is a university city that's got two universities in it. And the two universities had differing statements about the price of student accommodation in the private sector, different statements. So the council went and said, why have you got that? And it's quite clear, and I know the place quite well. The students in the two universities live in different parts of the city. And it is genuine information, quite clearly genuine information. But what I'm trying to the point there is that that information is audited and is looked at. You have issues about sample size, you have issues about new courses where you don't have graduate destinations because it's the first year of the course, so how can you compare it, etc. There are challenges, but that's the nature of the key information set, and it is regularly reflected on and reviewed. It's not used by everybody, though. You've got the data there about how the KIS is looked at, and you'll see some peaks, and you'll see some troughs. And it's interesting that some of the peaks are when the data first gets uploaded each year. And I have a suspicion, I clearly don't know because I don't monitor it, that there's an awful lot of academic staff in institutions logging on the KIS to see what the courses in their competitors and their comparative institutions are doing. In the same way, they look at the... If you look at the old hero sites, they look at the REE results to see who did what. So, you know, you've got to be careful with data, as ever. Now, I did say that we come with values and we come with a number of things that we know about the sector. Well, I think some of the information we have is not used necessarily by all potential students in the same way. I think if we did the study and we look to see who used this information, there will be people who use it less than others and who have opportunities to use it less than others, particularly those from working-class backgrounds, particularly those in low-participation areas, particularly those in lower-achieving schools. And part of the issue there is about the nature of the unequal distribution and resource within schools based on how students progress to higher education. Many of you will have read UCAS statements from schools to say, we are a particular type of school. We used to be a grammar school, telling you something. And we have the X percent of students every year who go into higher education. And they are geared up for that. Some other schools have far less. FE colleges, significantly less as a nature of their student population, the breadth, the proportion of their student population. And you have some students who make decisions based on geography. They make those decisions. They are their decisions. They feel that they have a lack of mobility in the same way that others have. In terms of information, postgraduate is another area that we really haven't got a lot of public information. It's very much relied on in terms of institutions. There's difficulties over the threshold data because some of the sample sizes are quite small, so you can't produce comparative data in the same way. We also are not that clear, and that's why the questions were asked in the NSS this year, for the first time, supplementary questions about whether or not people will carry on to study. There's a set of other questions that went alongside the NSS to try and find some of that information out. And we don't actually know what postgraduate students actually want to know. We have our views, individually and collectively, but we don't actually know that. We haven't done that work as a sector. Interestingly, when I looked at the UUK report on part-time, it defines potential students as coming from different types of sources. My own institution, we've classified postgraduate students in a particular way. We talk about career development, career entry, career breadth, and career depth, different types of postgraduate courses. And we've tried to classify as to what the purpose and intent of study is. If it's a nurse, they're looking for continuing professional development generally in their area. If it's a history student, they're looking for the depth in history. If it is a student who's wanting to develop in a business sense, in a business world, got a first degree in geography, it may well be an MBA with some experience in management. So there's different types of postgraduate study, in the same way that part-time study is different. There are people looking to move into a particular career, to change career, to develop as a career. I think it's also important to look and to ask yourself what I think is a much more fundamental question, is that information has to be right for the audience. Information is only part of what students need or potential students need. And you could have different examples. Your top left there. I think it's top left. Sorry, I'm looking a different way to you. I think the top left, you know, that reflects an individual who has got access to a PC, who's got access to a parent that's a, or an advisor who's able to help them and guide them. Top right, somebody a bit different. Doesn't have that. 5 years ago, the number of students who were care leavers who'd got 5A stars to C at GCSE was 5% of the care leavers. I talked to a number of the care leavers at my institution. Talked to them. I discovered one had had 15 different corporate parents on her route to higher education. Nobody to go to parents' evenings. Nobody who understood a system. The KISS doesn't necessarily help that individual. What is important is the sort of guidance that people need. And we need to make sure that it's not just about information, but that there is a guidance system that goes with it that enables potential students to know and to understand the issues that are involved. So you've got different examples there, different pictures that try to demonstrate that not every, you know, we are a very diverse body. And I dug back into the mid-80s for some definitions around guidance. And this is from NIACE. And you'll see that there are a whole series of issues, the seven principles of guidance, of which information is one. Only one. And it's quite important that we actually focus and reflect on the nature and some of those issues there that fall very much into what Edward was saying about the teaching experience and the teaching environment, around feedback, around enabling, around assessing. But it's also true in helping to develop those systems. And one of the things that has happened with successive governments is actually the career service that is in schools, which is focused on post-16 education, has been significantly watered down. And it all depends on where you are as to the level of guidance that you receive. And that isn't something that should exist in the developed world in the 21st century. And then there is also the issue about how we prioritise resource and how we prioritise funding. We'll be going through a number of funding changes over the next year or so as the issues of the spending review. And universities work on three planes: research, business engagement, and teaching. It is the latter that receives the funding cut, not the two at the front. And that actually poses a number of questions about what we want and how we look at a higher education sector in the future. So information is there. It is there on a comparative basis, but it's only part of the picture, and we need to actually think about how we engage with people and how we support people in making the decisions that are appropriate for them, whatever that decision might be. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.